Really, that this is mine. Others may have what they have, but I have mine. And you remember, savoring that feeling some days. This is my own. It is my house. It is my partner, my family, my money. I can remember the words of someone who is sometimes the second wealthiest person in the USA, and sometimes the third. I am worth 13 billion US dollars. I heartily recommend this to everyone. I can have whatever I want. Why an airplane? I can have an airport. Why a yacht? I can have a whole harbor. I am a very happy man. And you look at his face, and he looks so miserable. Meanwhile, he's presenting himself. I'm a very happy man. I heartily recommend this to everyone. Yet, such a person has no peace of mind, no clarity of heart, and cannot, by his own admission, have any meaningful relationships, because everyone just deals with him based on financial concerns. Is this pleasure of proprietorship really substantial? And why are we being pushed in that direction so intensely? You should have your own. You should have things. Even little children are taught that. It's mine, it's mine. You little ones, you fight like that sometimes? Never, right? You took my toy. So even as a little child, you try to get this pleasure from proprietorship, owning. Why do we have such a propensity? The yoga texts, particularly the Krishna texts, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, explain to us that because we are part of the Supreme, we have in minute quantities all the qualities of the Supreme. That means because there is the Supreme Proprietor, we as tiny parts also have a propensity to want to own. But our propensity is misapplied in this world. That's why we become so frustrated. We become depressed. That is why throughout the World Health Organization's WHO says mental depression is fast becoming the number two disease in this world in terms of measured disease impact, right behind heart disease. The prevalence of mental depression means even when people have sufficiently, they're still so dissatisfied they become depressed. Krishna consciousness means to look far beyond the very limited and insubstantial feeling of proprietorship, especially because that proprietorship is false. As the saying goes, you come into this world with nothing and you leave with nothing. Yet in between birth and death, we are busy making so many complications. A man once told me a true story. He was employed as a yacht captain for a very wealthy man from the Middle East. And this man had a huge yacht. And he would just travel around the world. So they pulled into a harbor in the Mediterranean, Italy, or someplace like that. And while they were berthed there, the owner came to the captain. The captain told me personally, this is a true story. And he began to chastise him. I told you that wherever you park this yacht, there should be no other yachts around. I don't want to see any other yachts in my eyesight. I just want to see my yacht. And what do you see over there? Don't you see another yacht there? So the owner began to reprimand very severely, just chastise very severely the captain. I think this will cost you your job. You have disobeyed my instructions. You have parked the yacht in the sight of another yacht. So what did the captain say? You'd be shocked to know. The captain controlled his temper. He told me this personally. He said, "Excuse me, sir, don't you remember that other yacht over there? You also own it." The true story. And the owner said, "Oh, that one slipped my mind. Sorry about that." And later in the day, the yacht owner sent the captain a gold Rolex watch. Here's a little toy for you to play with. This is the joy of ownership. It brings so much anxiety. If you're skillful in yogic knowledge, and yogic knowledge is meant for the practical daily lifestyles of everyone, what is the proof of this point? That Krishna spoke the essential yoga text, Bhagavad Gita, to Arjuna. Was Arjuna a sannyasi? Was he a swami? No. Arjuna was not a brahmana. He's a warrior administrator. Furthermore, Arjuna is not a brahmachari. He's not wearing saffron. He is a family man in the midst of a very worldly crisis. Yet Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to him, just so we cannot have any excuses. You know what our excuses are. This Bhagavad Gita is a very nice book, but we have to deal with the real world. We have to be practical. We get inspiration from Bhagavad Gita, but when it comes to our daily life, we have to solve things our own way. Krishna will understand. By Krishna's speaking to Arjuna, he has aimed his instructions at the whole world, everyone, for all times and all places. We need instruction in how to apply the instructions of Krishna. And in that way, we can be relieved from the unnecessary burden of false ownership. What are we entitled to have? Sometimes we become a little intimidated. Is the verdict of Bhagavad Dharma, is the verdict of the Krishna text that we should have nothing? How can we live like that? No. Srimad Bhagavatam is very practical. You are entitled to whatever you need to live, whatever you need to keep your body together in a lifestyle of enlightenment. That is how your quota is divine. In the Ishopanishad, that Upanishad dedicated to supreme proprietorship. Isha, supreme proprietor. Upanishad, the Upanishad specializing in giving knowledge of the supreme proprietor. It is stated, Isha Bhasha, Idam Sarvam. Everything is owned and controlled by the supreme proprietor. It's not that you're allowed to have nothing. No, we are allowed to have whatever we need for prosecuting a life of self-realization, of enlightenment. This is the practical solution to understanding who is a materialist and who is not a materialist. Generally, when people use the word materialist, what do they mean? They mean anyone who has more than me, they're the materialist, right? We have just what we need, but the others, they have too much. Well, not exactly that we have just what we need. We all could use a bit more. But there are others in the world. They are the materialists. They have more than me. They are the materialists. That is our definition. Actually, however, a materialist means whether you are rich or poor in terms of finances or other kinds of wealth, you are a materialist if you think you are the body and if you think that things in relation to the body are yours. Then you are a materialist whether you are a poor person or a very wealthy person. The definition of a materialist depends on your recognition of who owns everything. The same verse from Isha Upanishad, the Upanishad dedicated to the Supreme Proprietor, is echoed in Srimad Bhagavatam in the 8th canto. Atmavasham idam vishvam. Everything is owned and controlled by the Supreme Proprietor. You're entitled to take just what you need for living a lifestyle of spiritual advancement. So we are entitled to take something from this world. Yes, in that sense, the world does owe you something. You, perhaps many of you can remember feeling like, I've got to get my share. The world owes me something. Just time is separating me from what the world owes me. Then gradually as you get older and go through the school of hard knocks, you realize not only does the world not owe you anything, but it's not going to give you anything. And in fact, it's going to take whatever you have. But the yoga texts, particularly the Krishna texts, teach you that yes, you can expect something. You can expect what you need to live a life centered on elevating your consciousness to the ultimate goal of life. That you can rightfully expect. Sometimes in our approaching the Krishna process, sometimes in our beginning our bhakti practice, there's fear that, what am I going to lose? We feel this fear because we still have latent criminal tendencies in us. Who wants to feel like they're a covert criminal? No. We all want to feel like we're law-abiding, nice people. Generally, people will say, we're not saints. No one is a saint. But we're doing the best we can. We try not to hurt anyone. But of course, in the normal pushing on of life, some people may get hurt. It's unavoidable. We just try to make sure the persons who are hurt aren't our friends or our family, you see. But some pain is inevitable in this world. What is that criminal tendency in us, whether we are well-mannered or not? It's like the whole country is in uproar because of very well-mannered criminals in the financial world. They weren't coarse. They were very educated, very polished. Yeah. Meanwhile, they plundered. We like to feel that we are doing just what we have to do in order to live a normal life. But should that so-called normal life be based on ignoring the Supreme Proprietor? How is bhakti practical? So many religions rightfully present that there is a supreme cause of all causes, there is a Supreme Proprietor, but until we actually get an understanding of the relationship between the Supreme Proprietor and what is owned, our convictions aren't strong enough. I remember as a little boy going to church, we were taught various mantras. They taught us to sing, when we were little school children. Who made the mountains? Who made the seas? Somebody bigger than you or me. So this is very simple recognition that there is a Supreme Proprietor. But in this so-called scientific age, such sentiment will not take us very deep. Although it's correct, we need actual comprehensive knowledge of the Supreme Proprietor. What does that comprehensive knowledge teach us? The energies that Krishna controls. In other words, knowledge of the Supreme Proprietor is incomplete and not so motivating if it's devoid of knowledge of the energies of the Supreme. So the main point that Srimad Bhagavatam teaches you in the beginning is that the Supreme Proprietor has energies, and because those energies are everywhere, therefore the Supreme Proprietor owns and controls everything and is present everywhere because his energies are everywhere. This is a very important point. Know the Supreme by the presence of the energies. And because those energies are everywhere, that means everything is owned and controlled by the Supreme. This is a much deeper approach than just saying, God is great and God is good and he owns everything. Meanwhile, we go about our day trying to own and control as much as possible. But once we truly understand through the yoga process that it is energies that are all around. We are energy. The material world is energy. Living entities are energy. These energies belong to the Supreme Proprietor. And these energies are everywhere. There's nothing that's not these energies. Therefore, the domain of proprietorship for Krishna is everywhere. Because these energies are everywhere. It's a very important point. The essential yoga text, Bhagavad Gita, teaches us think energies and think proprietor of the energies. Then we can actually begin to understand the presence of the Supreme everywhere. There's nothing that's not the external energy of Krishna and the internal potency of Krishna, the material energy, the spiritual energy. We see inanimate matter everywhere. We see living entities everywhere. These are all energies of Krishna. So once we understand energies, then we'll truly acknowledge the Supreme Proprietor. And that means our life will be able to go much deeper than just our saying, God owns everything. We need to know what exactly is it that the Supreme owns and controls. How and why? In this way, the genuine knowledge of the yoga system takes us to the root of all creation and teaches us how to water that root. Bhakti means the process of applying devotion to the root of all energies. By our doing that, we are recognizing proprietorship. How rude is it that we don't acknowledge the owner of something? If someone came to your house without knowing you and just walked in the front door and started doing whatever they liked in your home, you would be quite offended. In fact, I think in the USA, you can shoot the person, right? Yes, is it so? Trespassing. Someone just walks into your house and just, you know, lays on the couch and opens your refrigerator and goes upstairs to the bedrooms. According to law, you can shoot the person. He or she's a trespasser. And if you didn't shoot the person, you would be highly offended. What are you doing here? We take proprietorship very seriously. But the Shastra, the yoga texts, advise us that much more seriously we should take the Supreme Proprietor. Why this fear? Let's get into the psychology of fear. We hate to admit it, but our criminal streak in us makes us afraid of the authority of the Supreme. In some religious texts, for example, like the Bible, it is said, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. There's truth in that. It is the beginning, but it's not the middle or the end. If we don't have love for the Supreme, then at least we should respect the authority of the Supreme. So the first step in Dharma, the first step in understanding genuine spiritual knowledge, is to have respect for the Supreme Proprietor. But people today sometimes get a bit edgy about respect because they think that's all that there is, respect for the authority. Spiritual life has to be something more than that. And yes, there is something more than that. Nevertheless, it is true. Fear and respect of the Supreme Authority is the beginning of wisdom. But it's not the middle or the end. When you proceed further in your spiritual development, you move on the highway to love, the ultimate love. Love of Krishna is far beyond fear, far beyond respect even. When there's actual genuine love, that means you are 100% sensitive toward the beloved. You have full sensitivities for the beloved. What gives the beloved pleasure? It's far beyond just respect or fear. Actually, fear of the Supreme means we still have a criminal tendency in us. I don't know the city of San Diego, but maybe there are some rough parts of the city, are there? No. That's somewhere else. Are there rough parts of San Diego?
Yes.
So, in the rough parts of an American city, when the police car goes up and down the street, if the police do go there at all, you can see that the rough elements, those who are engaged in criminal activities or want to engage in criminal activities, they become very tense. What are you doing here? Why are you on patrol here? We're doing wrong, so what? It's our business. But then you go into a section of the city where the people seem to want to be law-abiding. They're very happy that police are in the streets. Oh, there should be more of you. Where have you been? Oh, it's very nice. The police are here. Of course, I've traveled to some countries of the world in my over 3 decades of traveling on every habitable continent in the world. I've seen countries like, for example, Bolivia, that if something goes wrong, if your house is burgled, you don't call the police, because if you do, the police will come, and whatever the burglars didn't take, the police will take. But generally speaking, law-abiding people, relatively speaking, they want more police protection. Let's see more police. And those who have something to hide, those who have something shady going on, they don't like the police around. Guys, get out of here. What are you doing here? Who invited you? Now, the sad truth is we have this same attitude towards the Supreme Proprietor, towards Krishna. We have fear arising in us, thinking, oh, we'll lose something. Krishna will take something from us that belongs to us. So therefore, we have some paranoia that we can give too much to Krishna. We can become too Krishna conscious. We can become too spiritual. Meaning, we can become too acknowledging of the Supreme Proprietor. There has to be some room for some nice, well-intentioned, shady deals, right? In which, in some way, we can pretend that we are controllers and owners. Now you may be thinking, well, isn't this going a bit too far? After all, we do have to own something. What about our bodies? They're our bodies. Are they our bodies? These bodies are given, they're machines given by material nature. According to your desires in your past life, you get a certain kind of body in this life. It's the gift of material nature. Just like you go to an amusement park and there are different rides you can take. You go to an amusement park? Huh? No Disneyland? You should never. Oh, okay. So, there you can get on different rides, you pay your money, and you can fulfill your desire. Material nature is doing the same thing. It's a gigantic amusement park. And you have to pay money for the rides. Everyone works. Even those who don't need money, they still work. They want to feel like they can do something. I don't need money, but I work. Isn't that respectable? Or they make an excuse. It's not for me that I'm working. It's for who? The children. Meanwhile, they're working so hard the children never see their parents. But they're doing it for the children. So, material nature gives you bodies. It's not that they're your bodies. We cannot even claim proprietorship over our bodies. What to speak of things outside of our body? What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? The handbook for spiritual development, spiritual technology. Krishna says, Mamayvamsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manushastan indriyani prakriti stani karshati. Krishna claims all living entities as his parts and parcels. That's a very bold claim to make. And then Krishna explains the situation of his parts and parcels in material existence. Manushastan indriyani prakritistani karshati. His parts are stuck in the oppressive material atmosphere. And therefore they're struggling with their senses, including the mind. The mind is also a sense. With the mind you feel things. It's like a fly landing on a piece of toast covered with honey. The fly is attracted. Oh, I shall own, I shall control, I shall enjoy. Look at this beautiful piece of toast with honey on it. Of course, strictly speaking, flies as we know it don't have such a cognitive process. They're automatically attracted to the scent and the sight of honey on a piece of toast. And so, in any case, they are attracted, they land on the honey, and then what happens? They become stuck. So much so that the more the fly struggles, the more the wings and legs of the fly become covered with honey. You would say, but it's natural if you're in a tough situation. Struggle, struggle more, more. You have to break free. Mm-hmm. But you would, if you were watching the fly, what would you think? You think, don't struggle, it's futile. The more you struggle, the less chance you'll have to break free. But then look at our life. Can we tell ourselves that? Don't struggle, don't struggle. Don't strain. Don't labor intensely. The more that you struggle and labor, the more entangled you become. We cannot tell ourselves that. No. We have pride that The world owes us something, and we are entitled to some degree of proprietorship. Therefore, we must march on. We must struggle. So that's what Krishna talks about in Bhagavad Gita. Manushastan indriyani prakriti stani karshati. We're struggling in the oppressive material atmosphere, thinking we're going to be free and independent. That means thinking we are, to some degree, the proprietor. So what Krishna is proposing in the yoga texts, particularly in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna is proposing the peace solution. Recognize that everything, animate and inanimate, is owned and controlled by the Supreme. We shouldn't be fearful of that principle, because we are allowed what we need to live a life of bhakti development, of Krishna conscious development. We're allowed something. Even though we don't own anything, even though we're not the proprietor, we're allowed something. What, though? What is our allotment? Our allotment is for whatever we need to live in this world so that we make spiritual advancement. That is our quota. Once we accept this principle, we won't be envious of others. Why do you have and I not have? We won't be greedy. I have more, but I must increase. I have to have even more. Not for me, but for the children. It's always our excuse. Actually, the greatest treasure that we can pass down to the children is a lifestyle of spiritual culture in which the children can learn how to truly be self-satisfied. The parents have the very solemn responsibility to teach their children how to be self-satisfied. That is the greatest opulence. That is the greatest wealth. So it is not like recognition of the Supreme Proprietor will leave you with nothing. This is a false fear. And that fear comes from criminal tendencies. We have to be honest. We want to claim things that belong to someone else as our own. And how do we justify it? Well, everyone's living like that. Why should I be different? But you see how anxiety-filled people are. Just watch and see what happens now in the land of California Dreaming. Due to the budget crisis, unemployment is skyrocketing. I was telling some bhakti practitioners, some Krishna conscious devotees in New York City, by all economic statistics, California is sometimes said to be either the 7th or else the 8th biggest economy in the world. The people in New York were astonished. What? They didn't even know the 7th or 8th biggest economy in the world, just California. I said, yes, bigger than Russia. Yet, people are in anxiety. What's going to happen? There's no economic hope in sight. The anxiety levels are rapidly increasing, even in dreamy California. Anxiety is an indicator. Just like there's so many indicators in life, GDP, gross domestic product, and so many financial indicators, interest rates, so on and so forth. Well, the yoga texts teach you to understand the anxiety indicator. Anxiety indicates that we are not in harmony with the laws of nature. When the consciousness fills with anxiety and stress, it's nature's way of telling you you're not living properly. You're violating basic laws of existence. You're not conscious of the Supreme Proprietor. So we should take the anxiety indicators very seriously and pursue what they're telling us to the ultimate conclusion. We have to adjust our lifestyle. But who can make that adjustment unless they have superior knowledge? without superior knowledge will just go on in the same way. And even when upsets happen, and even when our life is turned upside down, we still won't learn. We'll just become angry. Why did this happen to me? How could this happen to me? And when the next opportunity comes, we'll make the same mistake again. So therefore, the bhakti solution, the Krishna consciousness solution, is not to learn by experience, but to learn through spiritual wisdom and apply spiritual technology. That's the best way to learn. Many of you have heard the mantra, experience is the best teacher. But how many of you know the second half of that mantra? Anyone? Raise your hands if you know the second half. No one. Experience is the best teacher because a fool will learn no other way. That's the original full statement. Now just see what happens as time has progressed over the centuries. This old English mantra, half of it's been forgotten. So why should you scratch your head when Krishna says at the beginning of the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Sakkalenaha Mahata Yoganashta Parantapa, in the course of time, the true meaning of Bhagavad Gita became lost. Krishna is not saying that the text became lost. He's saying that the true understanding, the true purport became lost. Therefore, he spoke it again to Arjuna. So here you see a English maxim, an English mantra, known for hundreds of years. Experience is the best teacher. Everyone just knows that one. Yes, experience is the best teacher. Yes. But they've forgotten the other half completely. This is the way a fool learns. This is the only way a fool learns. Therefore, experience is the best teacher. The bhakti process gives you the skills to see how everything is Krishna's energy. How to recognize the supreme proprietorship of Krishna in a practical way. Not just blind faith, but to actually understand the energies and see their connection to the supreme source. The bhakti process gives you that experience because the bhakti process is full of skills, techniques. Therefore, what Krishna talks about in Bhagavad Gita comes to life, so to speak, right before your very eyes. You can see the supreme proprietorship of Krishna in action. And you can move much further, though. Beyond respect for the authority and the proprietorship, you can move to the platform of love. In other words, here's the first stage, the criminal stage. When you hear about the authority of the Supreme, your back tenses a bit. Does this mean we're going to be left with nothing? If everyone in the world became like those persons wearing saffron in this room, then how would the world go on? We always have to assure people, don't worry, not everyone is going to be like this. First, there has to be acknowledgement of the proprietor. Fear in the beginning. Parents, sometimes they instill some fear in their children. If you do something wrong, you know what's going to happen. Did your parents? They tell you like that? We do something wrong. I know, you never do anything wrong. But that's not all there is to it. There's the love of the mother. So similarly, moving beyond fear and respect for the supreme proprietor, there is love. So at first, in the criminal mentality, you look around and it's mine, or could be mine, or will be mine. Then as you make some spiritual advancement, you recognize, no, this is someone else's property. I have to be very respectful and very careful. Everything belongs to Krishna. Ishavashamidam sarvam. But that's not the end of it all. That's the medium stage. The end stage is you look and see everything and it fills your heart with divine love. Remember, perhaps in various romantic phases of your life, you would just see something belonging to the beloved and your heart's emotions would be triggered. Everyone has experienced that, or at least seen it in the Bollywood movies. So, just seeing the shoes that belong to the beloved, you become overwhelmed with romantic feelings. That gives you some indication of what life is like on the highest level of bhakti. Wherever you look, reminds you of your beloved. In other words, you're far beyond the stage of just seeing the Lord as a police person, a policeman. No, you are seeing the Supreme as the beloved. And all the energies of the Supreme remind you of the beloved. So therefore, your heart is pounding with pure love, so to speak. Your heart, your consciousness is filled with pure bhakti. That is the ultimate vision that the bhakti yoga process will give you. Wherever you look, you become inspired with more love for Krishna. Not fear, not respect, but pure love. Your heart melts because everywhere you turn, you see reminders of your beloved. That is the ultimate stage in bhakti. So please, keep these points in mind. Fear and respect is the beginning. Then you get to the ultimate conclusion of pure love, where everywhere you turn, you recognize the energies of the Supreme and your love increases because wherever you see, you actually see your beloved. The energies and the energetic source, they're so together that you cannot live for a moment without being absorbed in love for Krishna. Because everything is Krishna's. Everywhere is the presence of the Supreme Beloved. You begin to see even the material world in that way. That is the top of the bhakti system. All right, we'll stop here, and we are going to give some spiritual names and hear the vows made by two practitioners of bhakti who have gone through the necessary preliminaries and impressed the senior practitioners with their sincerity and their dedication to the bhakti process. So we'll just make a space right here if we can. May I have their beads, please? Today we'll give them their spiritual names and hear their vows, and later they'll sit in at the next fire yajna that is held here. And we ask all the initiated practitioners to please bestow their blessings upon these practitioners, and wish them all success on their journey to Krishna. In this case, these two practitioners are husband and wife, and they intend to make the example of a Krishna conscious home in which the proprietorship of the Supreme is recognized, and certainly they want to develop love for the Supreme, love for Krishna, beyond recognition of proprietorship. They want to be inspired in pure love for Krishna. That is the goal of their family life. We'll call first for the husband, Bala. You say your pranam mantra out loud. Oh, you can you say it louder? Or?
Yeah.
Proper procedure is.
Hold on, say it louder.
All right, you can learn the second mantra later. I don't know it because I don't say it. Sorry, I can't help you. Balaramaswami. What are the four rules?
No meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex.
And what to do every day?
16 rounds.
Yes, very good. Which are your beads? Let's see. Your name is Nam Shravan. Nam Shravan Das means he's the servant of hearing the holy name of Krishna. All right, the wife. I forgot my Russian pronunciation. Is it Allah or Aya?
Allah.
Allah. Allah Ramaswamy. What are the four rules?
No meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex.
And what to do every day?
16 rounds of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra.
Minimum. You can always chant more. You want your mother to have a new name? Huh? Okay. Your name is Leela Shravan. Leela Shravan Dasi means she's the servant of hearing Krishna's leelas. So we have the Shravan family. Nam Shravan and Leela Shravan. Please, everyone, give your blessings to this Krishna conscious family. All right.
Hey, this Holiness, there, meet the Swami.
Marge is leaving.